It's another bonus episode. Stay tuned for the third and final installment in our special series recorded live at HIMSS 24.
New choices, new players, new models of care. You know consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer-first health is the evolution. Status quo or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Welcome back to the leading podcast about consumer innovation. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. This is the third and final episode in our series that Zane and I recorded live at HIMSS 24 in Orlando, Florida. If you missed the first two episodes, we encourage you to check them out. Episode number one focused on health system innovation leaders with leaders from Providence and the Medical University of South Carolina. And episode two highlighted technologies that you probably already know about and might not realize how much they're doing in healthcare, including Zoom, LG, and Hiro. So this episode is jam-packed with guests from three different organizations. A team of HIMSS speakers, a HIMSS subject matter expert, and a team of notable HIMSS supporters. First up will be Erica Braun and Tom Gutman from Ohio Health. Then you'll hear from Philip Bradley, a digital health strategist at HIMSS. And we wrap with some exciting news from Tracy Mills and Nick Vass, the CEO and president of J29. We hope this episode serves as a reminder of the breadth and depth of how HIMSS is truly creating tomorrow's health before, during, and after its annual conference. And we want to thank the team at HIMSS for providing access to such high quality guests throughout the week. All right, it's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go.
Hi, I'm Erica Braun. I'm an advisor of user experience strategy at Ohio Health.
All right, so tell me what all that involves. There's a lot packed in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So my role is really to go out and understand problems to solve. Each of my days is different. I go out and I do observations in the field. I do interviews with patients. We do surveys. We do all kinds of research really to understand not just problems to solve for our patients and our customers, but also for our clinicians.
Fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot going on in the day-to-day operations of any health system. So I imagine there's a lot packed in here. I'd love to hear a little bit about the session that you were involved in here at HIMSS. Can you tell me about that?
Sure, yeah. So our session was about our new smart room. So it's inside the smart room at Ohio Health. We just opened one of our new hospitals in Pickerington, Ohio. And at this hospital, we have 66 smart rooms today. We'll be growing that to 90 in May or by May. So really what that entails is a full ecosystem of products, technical products, but also the design of people and process. So for us, our smart room includes a 65-inch TV. On the TV is sort of an infotainment experience. So patients are able to engage with movies, TV, relaxation, but at the same time, they can quickly switch over to a digital whiteboard. So this whiteboard helps to answer a lot of questions that they typically have for our nurses and for our providers, like when am I going home? When's my next pain medication coming? All sorts of, who's on my care team? So we're really trying to help answer those questions. We did research in the field. A big problem to solve for us was communication and collaboration. We saw a lot of breakdowns of that in our hospitals. We have 15 hospitals at Ohio Health. And so we were able to go out and sort of understand current state where we could improve upon certain things. And that was one of the big things for us. We saw a link between that and time spent with nurses and doctors answering a lot of questions. And sometimes those weren't always the same answer. And so for us, it was really kind of cleaning up that communication.
So how did you arrive at the decision that the smart room was a way to address some of the problems and the feedback that you were getting? And specifically, which problems is this helping to address?
So a big one, like as I mentioned, was communication collaboration. Another big one for us is what we call time vampires. So it's really the things that suck away time from our clinical staff. We heard oftentimes that they were hunting and gathering information, equipment, Marty carts, and doing a lot of administrative work. And that was pulling away time at the bedside, which is where they really wanted to be. And for our patients, that's also where they would like them to be. A lot of times our patients were feeling not heard, not seen. They were feeling like a number. And so for us, it was really important to get the clinician back at the bedside. So not only do we have the whiteboard, but we also have virtual nursing at Ohio Health. And so that has shown to not only help with some of the problems to solve around efficiency. So our virtual nurses are helping with admissions and discharges. They're doing some extra virtual rounding. They're doing education. And that's really giving our time back to our bedside nurses to help with sort of the day-to-day, helping patients get to the bathroom and being more at sort of the bedside, being able to focus.
All right, you just mentioned education. Tell me about that. How does this conversation go with the clinical team? When you say, hey, we've got a smart room for you now. How does that go?
Well, we actually brought them in from the very beginning. So for us, and part of my background in design, I really find a lot of value in co-design. And so from the get-go, we brought in not only leadership, but some of our nurses that would be at Pickerington and involved them in the process of designing the virtual nurse program that we have and thinking about the design of the whiteboard and all these other things. So it was, that really helped with early buy-in. So we have now our nurse managers on the unit, and they were really instrumental in not only helping their nurses see the potential of how it might grow and be iterated, but also giving us some grace, because with a lot of new technology comes some hurdles. And so I think because we had early buy-in and we had that collaboration with the staff, they really were really engaged and they really embraced the opportunity to work in the smart room.
Love that. I love that. And then how does that conversation go with the patient in terms of, do they, or I guess, what's the feedback been? I would imagine it seems like a good thing, you know, on the surface when they're like, does it communicate more to the patient that they are seen and address that side of the feedback you're getting from patients?
Sure. Yeah. So we've heard from patients. We also have cameras in the room. We've made that decision to go ahead and put cameras in the room to save on having to find carts, right? And so we anticipated there'd be a lot of questions from patients around that. So we worked really closely with our nurses on scripting to help describe and help patients feel more comfortable with the idea of having a camera in the room. But what we've heard from patients is that they really love connecting, for instance, with our virtual nurses. They like the opportunity to connect directly with those virtual nurses. We've had patients say, you know, now my virtual nurse isn't rushing around, so I don't feel as rushed when I'm talking about why I'm here or really asking a lot of questions before I leave. And so with the virtual nurses who don't have distractions like Lucera and other patients demanding other things, they are able to provide that more focused time. And we've heard that from patients.
That's awesome. I'm smiling because I love just hearing how this is part of how co-design and how the process itself led to. It's not just the product itself, like the destination, but the process that got you there, which is undoubtedly leading to a better experience for everyone. Where can we do more of this? Where else can we infuse more of a user-centered, clinician and consumer-centered process just as we design new things in healthcare?
The opportunities are limitless, I believe. We're actually being pulled into now what a clinical exam room of the future might look like on the outpatient side of things. And so again, that's where we see a lot of opportunity to bring in our providers, our staff, and our patients to understand not only the new technology that might be a part of that ecosystem, but how that new technology with things like ambient note-taking, for instance, how does that change even the physical layout of the room? So Tom and I talk a lot about the digital space, right? Where physical and digital come together. How do we begin to shape and design how that feels and that looks, with technology kind of taking a back seat in a way, right? So technology is helping to facilitate that communication and that human interaction, but it's not taking center stage in the room. So we're trying to do that on both sides, on the inpatient and the outpatient space. But back to your question, that the opportunities are endless. And I think it's so important. We found it to be really important, again, for change management and for buy-in, that the sooner we can bring in those stakeholders into the process of designing and understanding the value of it, the easier it is to get their buy-in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I bring it up because in the conversation we've had over the last couple of years, we've really tried to ask this question more of where else, as we get better at the process, where else can we use that, you know, and how can we benefit and how can we innovate on behalf of not just consumers, not just clinicians, like this absolute intersection where it's crucial to have understanding from both sides and not prefer one type of stakeholder over the other, where everyone is a user in different ways of the care.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I think what we've found is if you're not taking care of your clinical staff, they're not able to take care of your patients. And so for us, what we've found, if you're only just focused on one or the other, you're missing a really important opportunity. And so we've just always found, again, if we can give time back to our nurses, that's going to come back tenfold and how they're able to interact and have the energy and the empathy for the patients, right? They're not going to feel burnt out because it's really hard to keep up that empathy for 12 hours, right? If you're being stretched so thin. And so we really want to try to allow them, facilitate their ability to meet the needs of the patient.
I love it. And I love that the Smart Room has been a vehicle to help propel that conversation by the sound of it in at Ohio Health. What else is on your radar screen these days? Like, what else is a problem that you're looking to address or just paying attention to these days?
That's a good question. I think for us, we started off from a scope perspective in the room, right? And I think we see a lot of value in a smart hospital. And so for us, we're looking now beyond the room. How does the nurse's station in the room, in the hallway, how do all of those connect? And then between units, how does all that connect? And then after the patient goes home, right, how is that full journey? How are we thinking about that whole journey for the patient? And so we have a new women's center that's going to open in a couple of years. And we're really looking at how are we preparing the women before they come, and then when they're here, how are we caring for them? And then when they leave, and they're in their fourth trimester, how do we continue that care and keep them connected? So those are the things that really excite me. It's just really thinking about the whole journey. We started with the room, but it's the full journey. I think we're going to create a lot of value.
I love it. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Erica, and I hope you've been having a good conference here, but appreciate you sharing a little bit about what your team is up to and the process by how you got there and the ultimate benefit that you're hoping to bring to everyone involved.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks, Jared. Enjoyed being on the podcast.
I'm Tom Gutman. I work for Ohio Health. I'm a senior creative technologist. I've been with Ohio Health for 5 years and just starting in this role as of a couple months ago.
Okay, so you co-presented about the Smart Room. Let's dig in a little bit on what that involves, some of the tech involved, some of the individual pieces there.
Yeah, so in our room, we have our camera, we have our footwall TV, our iPad at the bedside, and our door sign outside the room. So all of those kind of come together to offer virtual experiences, offer patient education, meal ordering, entertainment, movies, relaxation, and then the bedside tablet has all of the same things as the TV. And the door signs for our clinical staff, as they enter, they get their heads up notification on isolation precautions and care considerations.
So there's a long process involved in this from the start of the prototyping stage here. I'd love to hear how that worked, because I do think that's where a lot of organizations, I would guess there's not many that think it's a bad idea, to go this direction. So it's all about how do they execute it? How do they bring a lot of this together? So how did you even start in the prototyping phase?
Yeah, so a lot of it, Erica Braun, that you just spoke with, she brought all of the problems up and found a lot of great information for us to start looking at technology. So we try to prototype as quick as we can and as cost effective as we can. So we'll actually build things out, program different experiences, bring in demo products from vendors, and try and build out what that could feel like, what that could look like. Because for us, it's more showing and not telling, because, I can give you a pamphlet on a product all day long, but you don't really know what it does, how it interacts. And a good example is, we had the digital door signs that at first we had some people who were like, we don't need that. But then we actually put it in our space, showed them how it worked. And they said, we have to have this. Once they saw it, once they understood the benefit and the use, it really, really changes people's minds when they can actually get in the space and touch it and play with it. But it actually helped inform us on where we wanted to go with our products after that, because we had to come to a decision, were we going to build or buy? And with everything we learned from what we were building, we went out into the field and started looking at different vendors and seeing who offered something close to what we were trying to accomplish. And we found our vendors. We have eVideon for our patient experience. We have CareJolty for our cameras. And they really kind of took home what we tried to build in our mock space.
Well, it made me grin a little bit when you're talking about the signs themselves and people are like, we don't need it. But then as soon as they actually try it, it reminds me a lot of, family members of myself who will recommend something to me. And I'm like, yeah, the thought of it, I'm like, yeah, I'm okay without it. Like, I just don't want, but then as soon as, they've got it, whatever the latest gadget is or whatever. Yep. I'm like, now I need one. That's a nuance in the feedback process, though. Like, that's a nuance in the design aspect of this, and understanding that you're going to get different responses based on the way you're providing it to them.
Yeah, it helps people make informed decisions when they can actually play with it. Because, if you just go to a website and look at a company's product, you don't really get the full understanding of how it could work, how it could be beneficial. Actually go through your workflow and see, does that help my workflow? Does that take away things that I would, like the door sign is a big one, because now we have no more paper signs on the wall. Now we don't, what we have at Ohio Health, we have what we call chiclets. You know, you have to push the little bar to show patients a fall risk or any of those things. Now we've eliminated all that and put that into the door sign. And we look at it too, like we have step one of the door sign. We're looking forward to step two, step three, step four. Like, what else can we add on there that's going to help keep our teams informed before they enter and make sure that they're not missing something? Because there's a lot of things that happen when you're coming into the room, and all different teams that enter the room that need that information. So we're going to continue to build on top of that.
Fantastic. Other aspects of this process that are worth mentioning? Anything else about the Smart Room?
I think the biggest thing for us, our focus, because this is brand new for Ohio Health and for a lot of healthcare organizations, our main thing was making sure that it was easily adoptable. So we chose the products we chose. We chose the hardware we chose because they're very recognizable. You know, we have iPads at the bedside in the door. A lot of people are very familiar with how an iPad works. Interface for our TV is very familiar whenever you look at other streaming platforms. It just feels very comfortable because we realized, too, if people don't adopt it early, then it's going to fail quickly. So we needed to make sure that it was something that was easy to pick up and just start going with it. You know, we've had older populations that are intimidated by the iPad at the bedside, but then Erica and I would go in and just show them a few little tricks. We'd come back an hour later and they're sitting in the recliner enjoying themselves, watching movies, playing with the iPad. They're like, this is so amazing. So I think that was a big thing for us when it came to the tech, was making sure it was something that wasn't just crazy foreign, like a robot rolling into the room and talking to them.
Tom, it's been fantastic. And thanks for digging in a little bit with me and sharing a little bit more about the room. Best of luck at everything you guys have going on.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
I'm Philip Bradley. I am a digital health strategist with Hims. I've been with Hims just shy of 8 years. I've been in the healthcare industry way too long.
Absolutely. I'd love to just hear what's been on your mind in 2024 as far as digital health goes, and what's been in the middle of that radar screen for you.
There's a lot of things impacting 2024. The technology that's available is really able to start making a difference in the life of a clinician, the workflow. You know, we all know that there's burnout that has to be addressed. So I am excited about that. You know, it has to be rolled out in a meaningful way. We can't just run and buy things, because there's a lot of things to buy. We have to do it correctly, wisely. And also with the patients. We're interacting more with patients, and we're giving them devices to take home that we expect them to use correctly, you know, to interact so that we keep better tabs of them. On the technical side, cybersecurity is certainly a concern in 2024 and will be for a long, long time, unfortunately. And the impact of the investments we're making in software and technology and actually being able to measure that, you know, are we making a difference? Does it make a difference?
Yeah, I like that. And I like how we broke down making the clinician's life easier and helping the patient with the tech that they're bringing home to understand how to actually improve their health. I understand there's a pretty big announcement or a pretty significant thing you've been working on. You want to talk about the infrastructure model?
Yeah, we have had an infrastructure model for a few years, MFRAM, Infrastructure Adoption Model, and we modernized it. In January, we released it to the market. We're doing quite an outreach at Global Conference this year in Orlando, really to show that we've transitioned it away from being a technology model in itself. We still have that in the new model, but it's much more about measuring the adoption, that patient experience example. How do we know that patient's actually using those devices correctly? How do we know that the clinicians are using the devices we put in their hands to the full extent that we expect? And then the outcomes. What are we driving with these investments? I'm going to be putting a lot of money into this. What am I getting back? What do I expect to see improve? And then finally, sustainability. Are the dollars that I'm spending today going to be meaningful tomorrow? And carbon impact. You know, here in the U.S., healthcare contributes about 8%, a little bit more than 8% to CO2 in the U.S., then we have a responsibility to be more mindful about that. And how can we improve that in healthcare?
So tell me about that. Like, how does it work in terms of somebody hears about the model and they're like, yeah, we need that. How does that get implemented?
Well, the first step is, you know, go out to hims.org. You'll see all of our models out there, MRAM being the most well-known, and MFRAM, and you'll get a good feel for the overview of MFRAM. And of course, like any website, you can ask for more assistance. And we'll be glad to connect with your organization. The tool itself is a self-assessment online tool. We send you a link and then you complete it. We've seen it take about 3 hours if you have the right people around the table. And we encourage organizations to take it seriously so that we can have a meaningful response to the survey, so we can give you a more accurate roadmap of where you are and what are the opportunities in front of you.
So who benefits the most, in your opinion, by having this model implemented?
Well, I think the executive suite across the board. It certainly starts with the CIO, CTO, CISO being the initial drivers, but it helps the other executives understand why we need to make these investments in technology. I heard a vendor describe it yesterday as the Rosetta Stone from IT to the other executives. Puts it into a common vernacular. It helps them understand that if we invest these dollars, we expect to implement this new process and a way of measuring progress toward that goal. And more importantly, if they don't make those technology investments, what's the risk it is introducing to those objectives? Because we know that if infrastructure doesn't work well, clinicians tend not to use it, and patients as well.
Oh, yeah, thanks for clarifying that. I would imagine that this has been a product of a lot of feedback over time in terms of the need for this model. Is that true?
Yeah. We're a global organization, so this is not a U.S.-centric model. This is a global model. We have to account for things that are different in other countries, like cybersecurity, which I mentioned. It's based on existing frameworks, but we also have to keep in mind that there are countries that already have a national standard for cybersecurity. We have to take that into account and give them credit for where credit is due.
Got it. What other feedback, or was there a way to assess, like, this was the time to get this model out there? And
yeah, it's a confusing time in technology. There are a lot of different directions to go. Do we move to the cloud? Do we move hybrid? Do we stay on premise? What's the values of those decisions? And what are the performance expectations the organization has? It really goes back to, what is the organization expecting out of the investments in technologies? They don't do it because of cool upgrades. You know, IT might do that, but that's not the purpose of the investments from a non-IT executive perspective. So it opens the door to that CNO, to the patient relationship vice president, to really help them understand how these investments are going to improve their capabilities of delivering whatever service that they provide.
These are things that, when it comes down to it, when we talk about the patient side of it for a moment, I don't know that every patient is aware of. I think they just expect their care, you know, fair or not, right? They're coming into it warmer than ever and just saying, yeah, I'm sure everything is going to go smoothly. I'm sure the organization has made the investments where they need, and my data should be secure. And if not, I want to ask about it. Yeah. How does a model like this help a more informed patient population?
You know, expectations are through the roof. You know, all of those things that you just described, and they expect it to happen through their phone. You know, that's the shift. And the model expects the organization to have test labs, not only for clinicians to come in and touch the technology, not the stuff that's behind the walls, that's the IT decision, but the stuff that's going to be front-facing, actually use it. Because we see examples where technologies are purchased with great intent that interrupt the workflow and not improve the workflow. So we want to eliminate that by having test labs and letting them actually play with it in a real setting. You know, does the mobile cart actually fit into the workspace that we're expecting it to? Is it usable by the clinician? Does it stay on the network? Simple things. And on the patient side, the same is true. Now, it is very easy for me to put a technology out there and just assume you're going to be able to understand how to use it. In fact, you might not. You know, as a patient, you may struggle with it. And also having the support structure in place. So when that patient calls up and says, you know, I'm having a hard time with this blood pressure cuff, what do I do? They get a reasonable and responsive answer.
I guess what kind of reaction do we hope we'd get out there realistically from a clinical workforce that is stressed out right now, you know, and feels that, hey, we're adding one more thing. I could see how this can benefit a patient, but it's one more thing I have to learn, kind of a thing. How do we help the workforce understand the value of implementing this model?
The model expects it to be clinically led. It's not IT showing up and go, hey, I got a new thing. You're going to love it. Trust me. This is something that they're saying, this will help me in my workspace. There are examples that we've seen over the years. You know, the tablet seemed like a great idea, but don't drop it. It breaks if it slides off from a bed height, or it's too heavy, or the battery's too short, or it just doesn't stay on the network as I move from room to room. So those things have a tendency to get shelved because clinicians are going to find the best way to take care for their patients. Technology may or may not be involved. We want to be in the adoption focus area. How do you know that clinician is actually using that tool? Help desk isn't the right way. That's a way. But, you know, IT can look back and say, well, we have no help desk tickets, so everything must be great. But in fact, they just quit using the tool. They're not using it anymore. So there are no help desk tickets. It's in a closet. So we expect, infrastructure adoption model expects organization to have a process to understand, yeah, you're using it, and report to the other executives. This is what our goal is. This is where we are on the curve to meeting it. We're behind schedule or we're on schedule, so that they can make adjustments and not get to the end of the road and go, oh, that didn't work. You know, let's fix it along the way.
Thanks for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
My name is Tracy Mills. I'm the CEO and founder of J29. J29 is a company I founded about 7 years ago with the desire to create a really employee, people-centric company. J29 is named after my favorite Bible verse, Jeremiah 29:11. And along with that, we give back to the community. It's literally one of the reasons we were founded. So we tie their earnings to different nonprofits. And, you know, being a government contractor in this healthcare space, coming to HIMSS, we've partnered with HIMSS through HIMSS Gives Back. And this year, J29 is, for the third year in a row, actually, the champion sponsor and the recipient of the HIMSS Gives Back program this year is Up Orlando.
Super cool. Tell us about that. How do you select who to partner with and you know, how that works?
Yeah. So like I said, I've worked with HIMSS for the last 3 years. And what I look for is a nonprofit that has, you know, far-reaching effects in the local communities. So maybe not just handling food insecurity or not just being a food bank, but Up Orlando stood out to me because they're in many different counties here in Florida, but it's not just providing, you know, food services. It's providing mental health services. They do a lot of job training for people who need it so that they can, you know, not just with the difficult times they're in right now, but they're training them to improve their lives and make their lives better and giving them the resources they need to be successful.
I love that. It's a multifaceted mission then.
Absolutely.
Love that. Tell us about partnering with HIMSS. This isn't the first year you've supported the HIMSS Foundation at all.
No, this is the third year that we've done it. And like I said, being in this space, coming to HIMSS, being a small company, we honestly want to get our name out there a little bit. But HIMSS Gives Back sort of gave us the avenue to do that goes along with our mission statement at J29. Our mission is to empower our employees to do great things for the benefit of others. So what better way to do that than to come to HIMSS and be the Gives Back sponsor, where we can have such a huge impact in the local community here.
It truly is a big impact, and I want to, you know, make sure we emphasize that. Any other thoughts that we haven't mentioned that you want to make sure it's about digital health, about the work you're doing, about this partnership that you want to make sure people know about?
Just the other part that I like to talk about with J29 is our culture and our employees. So, you know, when you look at employees and you look at empowering them and you look at employee retention rates at companies, you want to invest in your employees because they're the ones who are going to be with you for the future. They're the ones who are doing the work. And again, at J29, we talk about, you know, working hard and being nice to people. And that's the impact that you're going to have in the future. So I think investing in your employees and keeping them in the programs that they're working on is just as important as some of the other things that we're looking at. But also, I feel like employees are the piece that kind of get left behind in some of the greater advancements today.
100%. All point to instances where that's happening to ourselves or people we know closely. So appreciate knowing that people are focused on that side of things and are doing something about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love that. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks
you
so
as
much
well.
For joining us, Tracy.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me, Nick Vass. I am the president at J29 Inc.
Fantastic. All right. So we were just speaking with Tracy about the latest announcement about supporting Hims Gives Back. What else can you tell us about what's going on right now?
So, you know, I think even for a company, something that resonated for me, you know, 6 or 7 years ago was a company that was founded to be an employee-centered company, right? Which, you know, credit to Tracy as a business owner to start a company that worries about culture first. And then how do we keep the lights on second is certainly not common in the space, but really as we've continued to grow, that culture has remained the same. We tithe a portion of our earnings back to a nonprofit every month, not just this month with him. So we're doing something, you know, at least 12 months out of the year. And that really resonates well with our employee base too. I mean, we're around 160, 170 employees today, supporting health and human service programs really since inception. So commercial, state, federal level, but for our employees, supporting that vulnerable population, elderly population, you know, on the Medicaid, Medicare side, that is very full circle for employees that understand what their hard work is going back to. So them, you know, going above and beyond in our delivery for our clients and knowing that the more revenue that we're generating, there's a direct connection to the amount of money that's going back and we're able to do great things like Tracy's done this week with Up Orlando.
Are there other things that are going on right that are just like nice to remind us about?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about what we see at this conference, right? So there's an elephant in the room with artificial intelligence and the advancement of emerging technologies. I think the thing that's been pretty cool this week to see is in comparison to last year it was AI, how do I implement this into my business? This year, 12 months later, I've seen a lot more companies here prioritizing the cybersecurity aspect, whatever their business use case is. So for me, even just as an individual basis, you know, and a healthcare beneficiary, right, I like to see companies that are still prioritizing PHI and PII that they store. It's very easy as companies continue to advance and they continue to implement AI. AI is very successful off of extremely large data sets. Even more importance on the cybersecurity aspect that companies need to be focusing on there. So that's pretty cool to see. I think also for those that weren't here this week, seeing companies that are putting emerging technology use cases into the quality of care, the patient care, how can we improve care outcomes, healthcare outcomes, that has resonated well with me. You like to see companies that are focusing on using technology, like I said, to improve care, to identify where care is needed for people of all different demographics. So that's really resonated well with us. Really nice to see.
What else would you like people to know about digital health or any other work that you guys have?
We're that independent party, that third party that supports our clients with a fresh set of eyes, right? We don't have financial ties to healthcare insurance plans or providers. So we'll come in and we'll support them on various program integrity efforts, payment integrity efforts, provider integrity efforts that focus on fraud, waste, and abuse. So for us, seeing, you know, companies out here and seeing some trends around payment integrity, how do we do advanced analytics that can pull those outliers for that provider, for an example, who's abnormally billing for certain service areas, maybe related to, you know, lumbar injuries, and that's not their specialty. So let's drill into that. And are there instances of fraud, waste, and abuse that we can focus our work around? So it's been really interesting to see, you know, hot topics in tech, in healthcare tech that we heard about 2 years ago. And what are the business use cases now that companies are really doing with that? So it's been very fruitful, to say the least, to see that for us in the community.
Yeah, Nick, it's been a pleasure to dig into this and give us, again, some positive news and really exciting to contemplate the impact that all of this is having out there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Appreciate it.